The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, I Got This. Amber Machakos continues her family's legacy in hospitality. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Continuing Her Family's Legacy. Amber Machakos is a rising leader in a restaurant industry hit hard by the pandemic. Written by Erica Wells. At the age of 7, Amber Machakos was the first face customers saw when they approached the drive-thru window at her parents' Miami Subs restaurant in South Florida. But one day, she was working the cash register during the lunchtime rush when she got flustered. She grabbed a milkshake for a customer but dropped and spilled it. My dad was in the back kitchen cooking. My mom was on the front cash register, and it was a horrifying experience, she says. Her father, Lou, later tried to comfort her, but she had had enough. I said, okay, that's it. This is not what I want, she says. But I continued to work in the business in different capacities throughout middle school, high school, and into my college career. Amber Machakos earned a bachelor's degree in biological sciences with a minor in business at NC State University and planned to attend medical school. My father looked at me and said, what are you doing? You are absolutely nuts. Give me 1 year, and if you hate the family business, you can leave, she says. Amber Machakos gave it a shot, expecting to stay a year, but stuck with it. In 2008, she graduated with a Master of Management in Hospitality degree from Cornell University. Now, Amber Machakos is a rising leader in the restaurant industry as president of Raleigh-based LM Restaurants, which has 31 restaurants across the Southeast and 2,500 employees. She's also the next chair of the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association, which represents over 20,000 restaurants and lodgings establishments throughout the state. But she's taking on key roles in an industry facing significant headwinds as the pandemic has slashed revenue and gutted its workforce. Despite its stable brands, LM Restaurants' revenue dropped 60% in 2020. Still, LM Restaurants is expanding with a barbecue restaurant in Raleigh, an upscale Mexican concept in Cary, and more restaurants in Florida. Her approach? Build on what her parents started by putting employees first. We're in the people business, Machako says. They're not a number. They have a personality and a story. They're an individual with different needs than other people on our team. As a leader, how do we have a meaningful relationship that meets their needs? Building a family business. Amber Machakos learned from an early age that the restaurant industry can be full of surprises, but her family has been there to support her. Papa Lou Machakos, whose other daughters, Chantel and Crystal, have also worked in the business, says, it feels great to have someone like Amber, who has been with me now for 18 years, and be able to pass the business down to her. It feels great to have such a good, strong family. LM Restaurants dates to 1978, when Lou Machakos and his wife, Joy, started their first restaurant, Seafood Shanty, in Deerfield, Florida. The fact that we are still family-owned and operated is really important, Amber Machako says. When we have dinner at night, that's our board meeting. The other thing that makes us unique is a long history. Lou Machakos grew up in Greece, where mealtime meant being surrounded by good family, food, friends. However, in 1964, at age 18, he borrowed money from his aunt and moved to Montreal. He met Joy in 1975. They married 2 years later and settled in South Florida, where Amber Machako spent part of her childhood. The family joined the fast food Miami Subs franchise and brought the concept to the Triangle in 1992. Within 4 years, they had 10 locations. My parents realized they didn't want to go back to the snow, but they knew they wanted out of Florida, Amber Machako says. Dad drove up and down Interstate 95, stopping at different cities, and fell in love with the culture here in Raleigh. They knew this is where they wanted to raise their family. The company now has 13 brands and supports 7 licensee locations. The largest concept, Carolina Ale House, has 26 restaurants throughout the Carolinas, Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee. When we opened Carolina Ale House, it did not work, Lou Machako says. It took a lot of work and money to get it going. We still work very hard. If you're not willing to work 7 days a week, then you're not going to succeed. The signature brands include Taverna Agora and Vidrio in Raleigh, Oceanic at Wrightsville Beach and Pompano Beach, Florida, and Blue Water Waterfront Grill Henry's Restaurant and Bar, and Hop Supply Company in Wilmington, and it's adding more. In July 2020, the company opened Lucky Fish in Pompano Beach, an open-air outdoor restaurant. Lou Machacos has no immediate plans to retire and is focused on growing the company while based in Florida. Consumers are a lot more educated than they used to be, he says. Employees do not have to work as hard as they used to. Younger people today are a little bit more into technology. It's not like the old days when we used to write out tickets by hand. During the pandemic, revenue was down 60% in 2020 compared to the prior year. In 2019, the company brought in almost $100 million. Triangle Business Journal has previously reported. The restaurants under the company obtained payroll protection program, PPP funds, including Carolina Ale House, which received at least $8 million. The restaurant industry has a low barrier to entry, Amber Machaco says. A lot of restaurants pop up, but they don't stay around for a long time. We have the stability to show we will make it through tough times. When restaurants suspended indoor dining due to mandatory restrictions last March, LM Restaurants ramped up its curbside business and worked with third-party vendors to expand delivery service. The company decided against renewing one Carolina Ale House lease in Uptown Charlotte and instead plans to relocate the restaurant later this year. The high-rise building location was no longer ideal after the usual work crowd dwindled as employees shifted to work from home. Also, like restaurants across the country, the group is trying to overcome supply shortages and increased food costs. Continuing the legacy. Eddie Coleman, founder of Coleman & Associates, has seen the evolution of LM Restaurants since meeting Lou Machacos in 1990. They've been part of at least 200 transactions, mainly involving property acquisitions for restaurants, including the first Carolina Ale House on Creekside Drive off Wake Forest Road. After the restaurant struggled in an industrial part of town, Coleman opened another location at the Centrum at Crossroads Shopping Center in Cary. As soon as it was built and opened, it became an instant success, and it enabled him to expand that concept to numerous other locations, he says. It continues to be a concept that people enjoy. About 6 years ago, Lou Machacos relocated to Florida, where he started aggressively expanding there with beachfront concepts that have also performed well, Coleman says. They've been able to go into other restaurants that were already successful, put their touch on them, and bring them into the organization, and now they're even more successful, he adds. Lou would sit down at a table and ask you to tell him how dinner was. He'd say, I already know all the good stuff. Tell me the bad stuff. He's always looking to improve. He has a bigger-than-life character. He's loud and loves to laugh, but he's worked his butt off. The Machacos family has said the secret to LM Restaurant's success revolves around its staff and site selection, but Coleman says they also understand their demographic and co-tenants in the area that drive traffic. He says in the last 5 years, Amber Machacos mostly has taken the reins. My parents are two of the most brilliant people in the world. I've been very fortunate to have phenomenal mentors, she says. Their focus is all about the people and developing relationships with the team members, and I'm continuing that legacy. She says she takes a collaborative approach that has allowed the company to progress and face the challenges the pandemic presented. Also, she thrives off hearing positive feedback about the restaurants and watching employees work their way up to leadership positions or branch off to form multi-million dollar businesses. The mother, wife, and businesswoman juggles everything by focusing on integrating her work and personal lives after taking advice from other successful female entrepreneurs, she says. You have to get creative so you create happiness and fulfillment in both areas, Amber Machacos says. That advice struck a chord with me that I always try to focus on. When I'm with my husband and my children and friends, I want to give them undivided attention. But when I need to go into work, I'm solely focused on being there. Women have had a meaningful impact on the restaurant industry, holding 56% of the jobs, and one-third of the restaurants are majority-owned by women, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Moving forward. The Machacos family does not plan to sell, she says. There are still opportunities to expand and help others in the process. We're at a crossroads where we're going to see a lot of changes, she says. You'll see the successful, really creative people who aren't afraid of change rise to the top because we can no longer operate our business the same way we have in the past due to COVID and the staffing crisis. The Delta variant is throwing us a curveball, so we have to continue to remain on our toes. We have to set a mindset for the team. We're going to have challenges, and we're going to have to stay nimble and responsive to the marketplace. The company has three restaurants under construction, including the Preserve Barbecue in Raleigh, in partnership with Pitmasters and father-son team Ed and Ryan Mitchell. The Whole Hog Barbecue restaurant will be situated in Creekside Drive, inside the Beltline, in a former original Carolina Ale House location. Also, plans are in place to launch Morea, a Mediterranean-inspired eatery on the oceanfront in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and a Verde Cochino and Tequila Bar, a Mexican concept in collaboration with Top Chef alum Katsuchi Tanabe. The acclaimed chef, known for his Mexi-kosher culinary skills, joined LM Restaurants in 2019, shortly after closing his Raleigh restaurant, High Horse. For LM Restaurants, the mentality is, let's take care of our employees first, and then they will help us take care of our guests, says Tanabe, who is the executive chef. It's rewarding when you have all these restaurants under the umbrella and we're working together as a team to take them to the next level. They were already good restaurants, but you need marketing and innovation to keep going, and Amber and her family have been very open to that. He became the chef in residence at Vidrio and went on to help other restaurants in the company refresh their menu and adapt amid the pandemic. Averdi is scheduled to open this winter at Crossroads Plaza Shopping Center in Cary. In recent years, Amber Mashakos has not done much dining out, especially after dealing with 11 properties that were impacted by Hurricane Florence, which slammed the Carolinas in 2018. Among the damaged establishments were Oceanic on Wrightsville Beach, which was rebuilt and reopened in 2019. That same year, the company opened Oceanic at Pompano Beach, which is the biggest restaurant in the company at about 20,000 square feet. Then, the pandemic started in 2020, which led to the current industry-wide staffing crisis. I haven't gotten out much, but there are a lot of different foods at different places that I enjoy eating, she says. I always go back to my grandmother's home cooking and those classic comfort recipes, but I also enjoy going out. In her free time, she loves sewing, gardening, and spending time with her husband, three young children, and dogs. Amber Mashakos welcomes the competition that is heating up in the local food scene. I'm excited about the vibrancy that Raleigh is seeing with different chefs coming to the area, she says. More unique restaurants opening only helps to make Raleigh stronger. And now we turn to the latest series of stories in the Triangle Business Journal, 52 Shades of Success, about this project. The 52-week project showcases accomplishments, challenges, and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by people of color, women, immigrants, veterans, representatives from the LGBTQ plus community, and a few other groups forwarding the mission of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. The project will also delve into important trends and issues relating to DEI. The headline, Breaking the Glass Ceiling, How Kenya Odor Has Proven Herself in the Tech World and Built a Firm That's Pushing Toward Revenue of $1 Million. Story by Connie Gentry. Part of the motivation for starting her own company were challenges that Kenya Odor faced as a black woman working in the tech industry. Odor, who has a PhD in philosophy and human factor psychology, spent the early part of her career at IBM before moving into a consulting role and then launching Lean Geeks in 2012. Lean Geeks provides research and design expertise to create strategic solutions in the user experience space, or UX space. As a black woman, I have to show the person that I am every day, Odor says. For several decades, I felt challenges in technical organizations and an industry where I might be the only female, the only black person in the room. I wanted to be in a position where the people that I engaged with or who sought out our services were comfortable with who I am, where I knew they were not forced to partner with me because we were in the same organization, but that it was something they proactively sought out and they felt a certain level of trust to engage my company. What started as a moonlighting initiative quickly evolved, and by 2017, Odor was running Lean Geeks full-time, although she also makes time to teach one semester a year at NC State University, where she obtained her doctorate degree. The business has been profitable three of the last 4 years, basically since she made it her full-time focus, and 2020 proved to be the best year to date, with revenue approaching $800,000. Surprisingly, 2020 was the year I was able to pick up an assistant, but I'm not sure what caused more opportunities to come our way last year, Odor says. In some cases, companies that performed unexpectedly well during COVID wanted to understand better how to keep that momentum going. There were also companies that had sought research funding in 2019 and had to use that funding in 2020. All of those variables came into play. We're on our way to being profitable again this year and to exceed our 2020 sales numbers. Those outside the IT world may not fully appreciate what goes into producing a superior user experience, but nearly everyone knows the frustration of slow downloads or content that fails to display well on a mobile device. Lean Geeks blends technical expertise and creative talent to develop optimum experiences that speak to the needs and preferences of end users. Whenever we do projects, we try to couple someone who is on the industrial engineering and cognitive experimental psychology side with someone more creative, more on the designer side, she says. What you have then is a really nice complement of someone who thinks of the nuts and bolts, the pure mechanics of answering, can the user get something done, and what is their motivation and goal, and a designer who can bring the UX to life. Together, that complement produces the best outcomes for our clients. At least 80% of Lean Geek's work is business to business, but Odor notes one of the differentiators in her company is that they also look at how its clients' users are going to be impacted. When I talk about IT solutions, they're not just systems implemented in organizations, it's technology that people use in various capacities, she explains. It could be technology you use on your phone to look at social information, or devices that are used in medical procedures, or mobile and desktop apps to manage health insurance. The same system may be used by both consumers and professionals. That's where we differentiate ourselves. We try to do the work not only for the end user who paid for the product, but also the end user who is impacted by the product. Odor's training in experimental psychology helps her understand the problems and ecosystems of her clients and enables research to identify the data and demographics of end users. We start with the problem space, and then we may have to do a little digging, like psychology research, to figure out where to find that data and recruit people for interviews, she says. The greater challenge is recruitment of minorities, because people of lower socioeconomic groups are typically harder to recruit for research. Odor's solution is to employ creative ways to recruit the right people. Often that involves non-traditional approaches, such as utilizing social networks or personal connections. She's learned that leveraging relationships to engage recruits promotes better participation. As a black woman, I've always had a focus on diversity and inclusion, and I have a team that is comprised across genders, ethnicities, and the LGBTQ community, she says. When I look at the research we do, I push recruiting across demographics. If you have an advisory board of folks who are all homogeneous, all with the same sort of income or education levels, that's not good. We work to find people who represent your user base across different demographics and psychographics. Lean Geeks, which does staffing and recruitment work for its clients as well as consulting in the UX space, employs 7 people plus contract workers. 90% of the staff are women. Odor says it's a stat that she's proud of having achieved, particularly in an industry that is traditionally male-dominated. Jason Gelb Roche, president of the Triangle Chapter of the User Experience Professionals Association, which has hosted the annual UX Y'all Conference since 2018, says achieving diversity in the tech world isn't easy. It's no secret that diversity and inclusion has been a challenge in the tech industry, and many in the user experience field struggle with the lack of diverse voices on a daily basis in their careers, he says. UX Y'all was founded with addressing diversity and inclusion as a core principle, he adds. We wanted to make sure we provided a platform for perspectives from a diverse set of speakers so we could learn from talented individuals who have an understanding colored by experiences different from most in the field today. Over the years, women have made up half of our speakers, and we've done our best to make sure people of color have been well represented, both in keynotes and speaking sessions. Their voices have provided valuable insights which many of us in tech don't have access to through our jobs. Odor says people gravitate to her company because it's minority owned. Especially after the season we have been in over the last couple of years, there are organizations that want to work with us because of our certification as a woman-owned, hub-certified business, she says. Often we are competing against much larger companies, which in most cases are not women-owned or minority-owned. She and her husband, who moved here from Kenya, funded the start of the business, and the momentum of incoming business has kept them going without having to secure financing. The company has clients nationwide, with the majority located outside North Carolina. And there are also 2 news stories in the 52 Shades of Success section. User Experience Conference to focus on DEI. Unity is the theme of this year's UX Y'all User Experience Conference, which celebrates the Triangle's diverse and growing design and technical scene. UX Y'all co-chairs Ione Opris and Amanda Decker Garcia explained that each year since the conference started in 2018, a theme is chosen to foster conversations about the direction of the industry and what is happening within society. This year's theme gives us an opportunity to explore how we can work harder to bring people together and make our industry more inclusive. Each conversation has been carefully selected to show how we can come together as a community by connecting our different experiences, spaces, and strengths, Oprah says. Keynote speakers include Regine Gilbert, industry assistant professor, Mike Montero, design director and co-owner of Mule Design Studio, and Sarah Wachter-Botcher, founder of Active Voice. Additional keynote speakers and sessions will be announced in the coming weeks. The UX Y'all Conference will be a virtual event September 23 through 24. Visit UXY'all, that's UXYALL.org. Native American Festival comes to Raleigh. The Black Indians of North Carolina 2021 Powwow will be held on September 25. From 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Southeast Raleigh YMCA. The event is a traditional Southeastern-style Native American powwow with educational awareness about African American and Native American people from North Carolina. The powwow will feature the 2021-22 Miss Kohari Taylara Faircloth. There will be traditional drum group music, dancers, retail vendors, and a live version of the Black Indians NC Conversation Circle panel with a special presentation to honor tribes in North Carolina. And finally, in this section, we have a column written by Layla Bekri, who is Executive Director of International Focus NC. The headline, "We Must Act Now to Turn the Triangle into a Global Hub." The COVID-19 pandemic diminished our social spaces and our breadth of interactions. That much is true. Well over a year into this unusual experience, we are still waking up with that disagreeable sense of withdrawal and isolation and many questions about how we fit into our world. Never have our interpersonal connections seemed so important. The power of culture helped keep us united throughout this time, expanding our minds and widening our horizons every day in every way possible. Individually, some of us sought out conversation and dialogue in order to alleviate our loneliness. Some picked up a new language, while others immersed themselves in virtual art exhibits, concerts, and museum tours to lift the mood. We've even found comfort in the pursuit of causes, and our humanity has soared with the fight to defeat the pandemic. In the Triangle region, known well for its wide-reaching, innovative, and academic circles, this is also a definite chance for us to look beyond our clichés. For one, why do we engage in activity that is global in spirit, but do not feel this reflected in our community? We would like to think of Raleigh as a source of cosmopolitan opportunities and delights, so why has our area not yet been realized as a vibrant metropole of international culture? Where is that je ne sais quoi? What could be missing? This greater vision for North Carolina requires action on the part of its international community. To rally the political will to support itself rather than looking solely through the lens of trade and breakthrough innovations, to recognize that grassroots organizations are the sturdy fabric of any cultural development, to incentivize learning about the global contributions to our economic achievements, to democratize, modernize, and make itself accessible to all. In time, might Raleigh become the global capital that routinely honors our international influences, past and present, maybe a zone where everyone's rich and diverse heritage is displayed, or a space to connect and create lasting cross-cultural dialogues between North Carolina and the world? How about a forum where each individual adds a voice and a perspective? For this, we ought to consider establishing an international center of culture, a place for discovery where everything coexists, books, art galleries, museums, cinema, and auditoriums, all meant to deepen our understanding of the worlds that inhabit our area, while awakening our curiosity for the wider globe. More efforts are also needed to support artistic exchange through existing projects, programs, and partnerships of international scope, which many of our deserving residents have yet to explore. Let us see the Triangle become this distinctively creative hub where global cultures infuse their dynamism and transform our collective experience, a regional and international destination for cultural tourism, connecting our grounded past and innovative present traditions, and capturing all the expressions of who we are as a community. North Carolina is rapidly rising, and it is high time to make ourselves a shining star at home and on the world stage. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. The first headline, new North Carolina product targets athletes. A North Carolina company with its headquarters in Raleigh is looking to make an impact in the sports supplement market. BOA Nutrition's concept is simple, a bottle that uses an aerosol blast to help athletes replace the sodium they lose when sweating. The goal is to attract triathletes first and then expand. It's a small market, it's a niche market, CEO John Pritchett says. We're not going to do $5 million or $10 million in sales, but we'd be happy if we did $1 million in sales and then we went on to the next phase. The concept is the brainchild of entrepreneur Hank Derschlag, who has an extensive background in sports nutrition and who has founded and exited other companies before focusing on developing this concept. This one is more of a bigger opportunity, a longer-term play, Pritchett says. The role for Pritchett, who is based in Winston-Salem, is to launch and scale the company, which already has some significant financial heft. BOA has raised $2.3 million already and has a medical advisory board that includes Dr. Jeff Bytomsky of Duke Sports Medicine and Dr. David Burkhoff of UNC Sports Medicine. Bytomsky says he has been connected to some previous efforts by Derschlag and sees the product having the potential to help top college athletes, especially those who are heavy sweaters. I think it's going to be one of those things that helps change what we do, Bytomsky adds. Investors include Jim Kitchen, a serial entrepreneur and professor at UNC Chapel Hill, Jim Dayton, president and CEO of Bioagilytic Labs, Afshin Safafi, an entrepreneur in Colorado and Bioagilytic founder, Alston Gardner of DGI Capital in Chapel Hill, and Aaron Wright, the chief operating officer of Prescription Benefit Solutions. That group has been really helpful all the way through the process, Pritchett says. We're at the stage now where the rubber hits the road. Morrisville lands major event. A cricket facility in Morrisville has landed a major event. Minor League Cricket just announced the first Toyota Minor League Cricket Championships will be held at Church Street Park, which opened in 2015. The semifinals will be October 2nd and the final October 3rd. The tournament features some serious dollars, the largest in American cricket history. The total purse is $250,000, with half that going to the winning team. Admission is free. The community around Church Street Park and in the broader Raleigh region has embraced cricket with incredible passion, which makes this venue an ideal location for this historic finals weekend, says Justin Giel, tournament director for Minor League Cricket. A group of investors plans to launch a professional league, Major League Cricket, in 2022. Krispy Kreme opens up in Egypt. Tasty news for those planning a trip to the Great Pyramid of Giza. Krispy Kreme has entered the Cairo market. The North Carolina-based donut maker has launched a location in the Egyptian capital. Sweet dreams have become reality in Cairo, Egypt, as Krispy Kreme has opened the global donut brand's first location in the country with its franchise partner, Americana Group, the company said August 30. The shop opened August 19 in New Cairo's Arabella Plaza. It is the 31st country where Krispy Kreme has a storefront. The company is now headquartered in Charlotte, but maintains its corporate base in Winston-Salem. Airport expects business to jump. Raleigh-Durham International Airport released projections that anticipate nearly 120,000 passengers over Labor Day weekend. Typically, business travel increases after Labor Day, but with the pandemic, fewer business travelers are expected to return, which is why airport officials fear a decline that could stunt the growth trend RDU has experienced so far in 2021. ACC move would hurt Greensboro. The Atlantic Coast Conference began in Greensboro in 1953, but new commissioner Jim Phillips has confirmed the league has hired Newmark to evaluate its future home. While the ACC has only about 50 employees in Greensboro, a tremendous amount of money flows through the league. According to its 2019 Federal 990 form, the league had total revenue of $496 million for 2019, led by $333 million in television dollars and $125 million in bowl revenue. A chunk of that stays in Greensboro, and the ACC often holds its basketball tournaments in town. Greensboro Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Brent Christensen says a review is to be expected and adds, But the good news is we're absolutely getting the opportunity to show what a great partner this community has been over the years and, quite frankly, will continue to be. Western Wake, bring checkbook. As fierce competition for homes in the Triangle continues, home buyers continue to pay well above asking prices to grab the house of their dreams. And a recent report by Orchard shows where buyers are going over the most. According to the report, the top zip codes where homes were going most over list price reveal the intense interest in neighborhoods in Cary and other parts of Western Wake. At the top of the list, zip code 27518 in Cary, 12.1% over list price. And that goes all the way down to zip code 27560 in Morrisville. That goes 0.4% over list price. And the other locations are 27712 in Durham, 27511 in Cary, 27519 in Cary, 27713 in Durham, 27513 in Cary, 27253 in Graham, 27540 Holly Springs, and 27502 in Apex. And now we turn to the On Tech and Banking page written by Lauren Onasorge. The main headline, Long Journey to NASDAQ. Durham Biotech has a strong female presence in top roles. A Durham biotech firm founded and led by women has hit the NASDAQ, a milestone its CEO says is a culmination of decades of hard work. Executives at Humacyte, which is developing bioengineered tissue, rang the NASDAQ's closing bell August 30, days after the SPAC deal closed, taking the company public. It's been a long journey, Humacyte CEO Laura Nicholson says. Persistence and just sticking with the mission was what really got us here. Creating a new biotech company and taking it public is not for the faint of heart. Nicholson is fond of telling her students the easy stuff has already been done. If you want to do something important, by definition, it's going to be hard, she says. And that's exactly how it's been for Humacyte, which is developing tissue that could be used to treat everything from vascular trauma to diabetes, if it one day passes regulatory muster. Humacyte went public through a SPAC, or SPAC, Special Purpose Acquisition Company, called Alpha Healthcare Acquisition Corporation. The firm also has been a trailblazer, and not just for its science, which came out of Duke University and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. According to numbers compiled by the Biotechnology Innovation Organization, women make up 47% of employees in the biotech industry, but just 31% of executives and 23% of the CEOs. At Humacyte, four of its nine named executives are women, including Nicholson, Chief Operating Officer Heather Pritchard, Co-Founder and Executive Vice President of Corporate Development Juliana Blum, and Executive Vice President of Business Strategy and People Sabrina Osborne, and its new board chair Catherine Sebelius, former U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services. Everybody's talking about this, says Vivian Doling, Vice President of Investment and Emerging Company Development at the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, which contributed $150,000 to Humacyte in its early days. It's just a fantastic signal to our up-and-coming potential CEOs. I think it's fantastic for North Carolina. Nicholson says the glass ceiling-breaking status of what the company is doing just adds to the gravity of the milestone. Durham's FlexGen scores $150 million capital infusion. Armed with a $150 million equity infusion, Durham technology firm FlexGen is about to go on a hiring spree, according to its CEO. But could an IPO be in its future? FlexGen, which develops software for energy storage solutions, has secured a $150 million equity commitment from funds managed by affiliates of Apollo Global Management. CEO Kelsey Pegler would not release financial specifics, but did say it was an investment, not a buyout, and that existing backers such as Altera Group continue to have a stake in the company. It's a partnership, he says. With this much outside capital, however, come expectations. Investors willing to funnel $150 million into a company expect returns. It's a whole new ball game, says David Gardner, CEO of Cary-based Co-Founders Capital. Gardner, who does not have a stake in FlexGen, says big rounds mean bigger exit expectations, and they can come with risks for early investors, as late-stage backers often have a liquidity preference ahead of founders and early supporters. Pegler declines to reveal the terms behind the equity infusion. Asked if an IPO could be in the company's future, he says the focus now is on expansion. We're focused on driving real, long-term, sustainable value for the business, and I'm sure if we can deliver on those pursuits, there will be optionality in the future, Pegler says. Weed killer startup looks to raise $3 million. A startup led by a former top executive at Bayer Crop Science is growing its coffers in Raleigh. Harp Bioherbicide Solutions has closed a $1.1 million in debt. It's the second funder for the firm, which closed on $770,000 in equity just last year, security filings show. CEO Bill Buckner is a name familiar to many in the space, an 18-year veteran of crop science's giant Bayer. HARP is trying to solve the problem of weed resistance, according to its website. HARP is answering the challenge with a natural biological herbicide portfolio, all derived from plant extracts, according to the company. And its latest funder only gets it part of the way there. The plan, according to securities filing, is to close on $3 million, meaning about $1.9 million left to go in the round. Already, four investors have participated. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Lee Fite, Fifth Third Bank Regional Market President. Over the next couple of years, you're going to see some changes in terms of the shares that, frankly, are commensurate with the investment we are making in the market. And finally, a number, a big number, $223.7 million. The value of shares sold by Triangle executives, including stock that is part of executive compensation packages, through July of this year. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Caleb Harshberger. Realty adds manpower. Apex-based Realty acquires local competitor. A growing Wake County Realty has acquired a local competitor in a deal expected to bring the combined firm to nearly $1 billion in annual sales volume. Apex-based Keller Williams Legacy has announced its acquisition of Raleigh Carey Realty in a deal set to close September 1, and that'll grow the company to more than 200 agents. Once the deal is complete, Raleigh Carey Realty will join its operations with KW Legacy under the KW Legacy brand and ownership. We needed to go to a place that had the tools and the resources, says George Wilson, founder of Raleigh Carey Realty. I'm really excited about what Keller Williams is doing now and where it's headed. Both companies declined to disclose the terms of the deal. Raleigh Carey Realty currently has a team of more than 80 agents, and Wilson expects around half of those to join KW Legacy's roughly 165 agents once the merger is finalized. The deal comes at a time of ferocious demand for homes in the Triangle, with many selling in days or hours and bringing well above asking price. The deal is also expected to bring the KW Legacy's projected sales volume to nearly $1 billion for 2021. KW Legacy had already projected $750 million in sales volume this year, and with this acquisition, company officials expect to add an additional $200 million to that estimate. Wilson launched Raleigh Carey Realty in 2008 in the thick of the Great Recession and began building a team of agents looking for more flexibility in a challenging time. We started a plan that was more economical, especially for the times, smaller percentage and lower fees, he says. Over time, we grew from a little basement office and we ended up moving to downtown Cary. At its peak, the company had about 115 agents and opened another office in Raleigh. But as the years went on, larger firms such as Keller Williams began investing heavily in technology and broker resources, making it difficult for independent firms like Wilson's to compete. Zebulon approves 418 home development. Plans for a massive residential development in Zebulon passed a major hurdle recently after the town's Board of Commissioners voted to approve plans for the 418-unit project. Commission members recently approved plans for the Pony Road Plan development, calling for 260 single-family detached homes and 158 townhomes. The developer is Fayetteville-based RHH Land Investors, LLC, according to filings with the town. The project is situated on 166 acres across three parcels at 705 Pony Road west of downtown Zebulon. Property owners include the Shontak family and an LLC that state records say are managed by the family. Filings with the town appear to show plans for a five-phase build-out. Timeline and pricing details were not available, and RHH Land Investors LLC did not return calls for comment. TMTLA Associates is providing planning services, according to plans filed with the town. Summit Design and Engineering is providing civil and traffic engineering. Graystar plans new apartments. Multifamily giant Graystar has filed its latest plans for a new apartment community in Raleigh. In August, the company filed plans with the city for Elon Parkside, calling for 252 apartments across a collection of three-story garden apartment buildings in West Raleigh. The project is situated on 6.5 acres at 6500 Chapel Hill Road between Edwards Mill Road and Interstate 40. "This is a project we're really excited about," Graystar Director of Development Zach Spencer says. "It's a continuation of an ongoing belief and investment in the Triangle that our team has long been a part of." Developer targets housing project in Fuquay-Varina. Town officials in Fuquay-Varina are currently reviewing preliminary plans for the Bexford subdivision, with plans calling for 109 single-family homes and 292 townhomes across a large assemblage east of downtown and north of Highway 42. Bexford is situated on a 82.2-acre parcel at 6490 Hilltop Road, down the road from Willow Springs Elementary School. The developer is listed as Raleigh-based Terramore Homes. And finally, we have another big number, $39.2 million. The amount paid by Maryland-based Berkshire 54 owner LP for the 296-unit Berkshire 54 apartment community, a deal equating to $132,432 per unit. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth, written by Evan Hoopfer. Sandhills Transformation. Developers' plans for Southern Pines include Target. More details are emerging about a nearly 100-acre development in Moore County that could include hundreds of residences, ample office space, and a Target store. John Silverman, managing principal of Midland Atlantic Properties, recently presented preliminary plans to the Southern Pines Planning Board for Morganton Park South. The proposed development would sit in between Morganton Road and U.S. 15501, near where Southern Pines borders Pinehurst and Aberdeen. The project would be built out in several phases, starting with retail development. Plans call for a Target store to serve as the anchor tenant, though Target Corporation has not confirmed the new store location. Moore County residents have long clamored for a Target and have made a Facebook page and a Change.org petition in an effort to attract the Minneapolis-based retailer. Multiple renderings of the retail portion of the project were included in the presentation to the town's planning board. Plans call for a 109,005-square-foot anchor building, which features the Target logo and rendering submitted to the town, along with a handful of smaller retail locations ranging in size from about 7,000 to 50,000 square feet. Midland Atlantic has plans to bring housing and office space to Morganton Park South, too. According to the presentation, plans call for up to 650 residential units, which could be a mix of multifamily townhomes and single-family homes, and up to 400,000 square feet of office space. And included with this article, there's also a big number, 700,000 potential square footage of Morganton Park South. New 100-acre project would bring more homes to Chatham County. Another development proposed near Briar Chapel would provide more housing options for Chatham County. Developers presented plans for Vickers Village to the Chatham County Board of Commissioners recently. The plan calls for up to 181 homes and space for commercial uses. The 101.8-acre site sits along Highway 15501 between Vickers and Jack Bennett Roads. The developer is listed as Vickers Bennett Group, an LLC which shares an address with Chapel Hill-based Primo Partners, a Ben & Jerry's franchisee run by local entrepreneur Antonio McBroom. There would also be 4 acres reserved for commercial use that would house a minimum of 20,000 square feet of space and ample room for green space. "Over 70 of our 102 acres won't be built upon," McBroom says. The board voted to refer the matter to the county. Firm makes $5.5 million Siler City buy. A Chicago-based real estate company added to its portfolio with a $5.5 million purchase in Siler City. In Commercial Property Group bought the Walgreens property at 1523 East 11th Street for $5.5 million, according to a deed filed recently in Chatham County. The Walgreens sits on 1.6 acres of land. The previous owner was Fayetteville-based Family Futures Incorporated, formerly known as Taco Properties Incorporated, which brought the property for close to $6.39 million in 2014, according to county deed records. The land now has an assessed value of $3.9 million, according to property records. And in a section called She Said It, we have a quote from Michelle Baker Sanders, the North Carolina Secretary of Commerce, on the decision by Gruporico of Italy to put its first U.S. facility in Kinston. The project represents a $28 million investment and could have up to 110 jobs. With options all over the world, it gives us great confidence to know that international companies are choosing North Carolina for their global expansion. And finally, a big number, 235. That's the number of new jobs a company is looking to bring to Lee County if incentive packages from the county and the city of Sanford are approved. The company, unnamed in public notice, is a building products manufacturer. Now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page written by Erica Wells. Pop-up looks to have impact. Boxyard RTP program offers boost for small business owners. A pop-up initiative has been launched to give women and minority-owned businesses a boost at a mixed-use destination in Research Triangle Park. Four small businesses will be featured at Pop Box, a 320-square-foot space at Boxyard RTP, the development off Highway 54 with dining and retail space constructed from shipping containers. Each participating business will use the location for 3 months, with the program running through 2022. Also, they receive a $5,000 micro grant through the nonprofit's Research Triangle Foundation and NC IDEA, as well as educational resources from Wake Technical Community College. The program also is a way to help the businesses recover amid the pandemic. Carrboro-based women's retailer 13 West will be there until October 12, and followed by Skylight, a homemade candle and wax melt company. Next, Pop Box Gallery, a rotation of exhibits from local and regional artists. And finally, Be Like Missy, which offers handmade jewelry and leather goods. More than 55 applications were submitted before select finalists were interviewed. The program is especially helpful for small businesses or concepts in their early stages when retail space can be cost prohibitive, says Tom Rue, the CEO of NC IDEA. The organization supports startups and small businesses through grants. Customer validation and feedback and finding the right product market fit is critical, Rue says. Founders can take off through sales and grow the company through revenue. You can try to sell your products online, but certain products and services are better suited for old-fashioned face-to-face interaction. Furthermore, the participants can find out if there is demand for their products, Rue adds. For some people going through the program, this will be their first interaction with customers, he says. So the feedback they get will be vital to their long-term growth. Once you start interacting with clients, you start learning about other parts of the business. Boxyard RTP opened in June with an extra container space available after a potential tenant dropped out, according to Amanda Freistock-Ronan, RTP's director of programs. Ronan says the Pop Box opportunity was available for businesses at any stage and founders from different backgrounds. Mobile bakery in Durham to open first storefront location. A French-inspired mobile bakery is opening its first storefront in Durham. Whisk and Rye will serve pastries and coffee at 3401 University Drive beginning this fall. The shop will be located near Academy Road by the Durham Academy Middle School. Owners Andrew Olivares and Shelby Smith put their own spin on European-style pastries, depending on the season. Their menu has items made from local ingredients, including flour from Lindley Mills and Carolina Ground, and vegan options. The business owners haven't taken their business to different farmers markets, but they chose to open a shop in Durham because of the diversity, they say. They are both Florida natives who relocated to Durham in 2014. We had our eyes set on Durham because we enjoy the customers we have here and the wide acceptance of different types of creativity when it comes to pastries and coffees, adds Olivares, who previously worked in a hospital setting. Neighborhood bar for Moore Square. A small plate bar featuring spirit-forward cocktails is coming to downtown Raleigh. The Darby is preparing to open in the coming weeks at 180 East Davie Street in the former space of Dickie's Barbecue Pit. The approximately 1,200-square-foot establishment will be located in the Moore Square District, which is undergoing a revitalization, says partner Matt Coleman. The Darby will be close to several residential buildings. We'll do some fresh takes on classic drinks and some cocktail fusions, Coleman says. We plan on serving higher-end rare spirits, and we'll have a lot of foot traffic coming our way. So we're trying to be more of a neighborhood bar. Everybody needs a watering hole and a place to have a few drinks and laughs. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Thomas Dabrowski, vice chairman of capital markets for Newmark, which is marketing the Triangle Town Center on behalf of LNR Partners. LNR is a commercial mortgage special servicer based in Miami that bought the property for $120 million in a July 2019 auction. The location of the asset is spectacular. It's a large piece of real estate in one of the most sought-after and high-growth markets in the country, in the Raleigh-Durham MSA. And finally, a big number, $57.6 million. Downtown food and beverage sales in the second quarter of 2021, according to the Downtown Raleigh Alliance. That is a 56% increase from the first quarter and a 215% jump compared to Q2 2020. And now we turn to a better world inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. We'll start first with the nonprofit briefs. Oregon Donation Service unveils new name. Carolina Donor Services, the state's largest organ donation and tissue recovery organization, has rebranded as Honor Bridge. The name Honor Bridge speaks to our honoring our donors' lives and their families' grief, their memories, and their decisions. President and CEO Danielle Needfelt says, "We build bridges of hope and purpose for donor families and connect grieving families with much-needed support and ways to connect with their loved ones' recipients." Interact hires Rainey to lead Raleigh nonprofit. Rhonda Rainey has been named the new executive director at Interact in Raleigh. Interact, located on Oberlin Road, supports victims and survivors of domestic and sexual violence in Wake County. Rainey, a Virginia native, received her undergraduate and law degrees at the College of William and Mary and has had a long career in government and nonprofits. Since its inception, Interact's services have been vital to support the dynamic needs of individuals and families impacted by domestic and sexual violence, she said. "I'm excited to become the next executive director as we advance Interact to a new level of service to those in our community who need and deserve our support." Carrying Place holds races to help distressed families. A series of runs on September 6th at the Cocobooth Amphitheater in Cary will benefit the Carrying Place, which aids working families facing homelessness. The races will be a 5K, 10K, and run, a 5K, 10K, and run, with a requested donation of $10. The Carrying Place, as it looks to teach life skills and provide short-term housing and services to those facing homelessness. The races start at 8 a.m. Activate Good seeks volunteers for service. Activate Good will once again have a month of service in September and is looking for volunteers. Activate Good had previously focused on service for September 11, but went to a month-long format last year. The concept was such a success that it will be continued in 2021. "Last year, we saw a light shine on some of the biggest needs in our community. People stepped up to help their neighbors and volunteered in communities across the Triangle. But we know the need is not over yet. We're hoping people will keep it up," says Activate Good Executive Director Amber Smith. Volunteers can find ways to contribute at activategood.org. And finally, Cary Group announces local grants. The Cary Women's Giving Network has announced $14,000 in local grant awards, according to Sheila Ogle, board president. This year, the board granted $5,000 to Alliance Medical Ministry, $5,000 to Hope Center at Pullen to help former foster youths, $2,500 to FIGS, F-I-G-S, of Wake County, and $1,500 to the Center for Volunteer Caregiving. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, "Until this stops, home prices will keep going up." So much has been written about home prices in some of the fastest growing areas in the nation, such as the Triangle, that rehashing the statistics sounds repetitive and frankly boring. Yes, we know average, median, mean home prices in the Raleigh-Durham area are going up at a pace never seen before. And yes, we also know if you are planning to buy a home in the area, the inventory is so low that some people are paying just about anything to have a shelter. Case in point, a Raleigh house recently sold for $1 million over its list price, according to Zillow. But is it just normal and organic supply and demand issue? Unfortunately, it is not. And now we have some proof. San Francisco-based Adlassa, a real estate brokerage that specializes in data analytics, was commissioned by this paper to dig deep and find out exactly who is buying these houses and why the inventory has dropped in this precipitous fashion. We looked at 1,602 home sales data during 2021 first quarter for the Raleigh area. We also looked at 831 sales in the Durham area. We wanted to find out who's buying these houses, where they work, and where they are coming from, as well as a few other variables. Dennis Karamaner, founder and CEO of Adlassa, says about 22% of all sales in the Raleigh area between January and March came from out-of-state buyers. Raleigh-Durham residents made up 44% of all sales. Guess where the remainder is coming from? Limited liability companies, trusts, wealthy buyers who mask their identities, and of course, folks who never identified where they were relocating from in various public and private forums and in the social media. Adlassa extracts information from all available sources to populate the details. So if you parse out the folks in the area who bought homes to upgrade or downsize, we're talking about a large percentage of people and companies and entities that are preying on this market to make a profit. And Adlassa's Karamaner acknowledges that until that percentage comes down, home prices will continue to go up. And due to time, we'll stop there. But the article points out the key point is about half of the home sales that are happening in the area, we really don't know much about who is actually buying the homes. And we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.